The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. The type of work is a juvenile adventure novel set in the backwoods of Missouri and the banks of the Mississippi River in the mid-19th century. This story features a lively country boy by the name of Huckleberry Finn, Huck's friend Tom Sawyer, Pap Finn, Huck's drunkard father, Jim, a runaway Negro slave, and Huck's guardian, the Widow Douglas. This story starts out sometime in the mid-1800s in the placid little Mississippi township of Hannibal, Missouri. Some months earlier, Tom Sawyer and his friend Huck had discovered an honest-to-God chest of gold. The two lucky, lively boys had split the $12,000 treasure, and trustworthy Judge Thatcher was safeguarding their money in trust. Meanwhile, the Widow Douglas and her sister, Miss Watson, took the rough-hewn boy under their wings and into their home to try to civilize him. Although he managed to put up with school and even learn some religion, Huck didn't take too well to Miss Watson's determined efforts to squelch his swearing and smoking. Then one day, Huck saw some footprints in the snow, realized that his no-good drunken father was back in town, no doubt with an eye to Huck's money. Huck, in response, immediately rushed over to Judge Thatcher's to sign away his rights to the treasure. He left feeling unburdened and satisfied. Now he owned nothing at all to fret over. Late one night, not long afterward, Huck found his pap, pale and ragged, crouched in the corner of his room. "You put on considerable many frills since I've been away," Pat spat in contempt. "You drop that school, you hear? I'll learn people to bring up a boy to put on airs over his own father." Then Pap asked outright about the money. Huck gave him the dollar he had, and the old man left. But the next day, declaring himself Huck's legal guardian, Pap showed up on Judge Thatcher's doorstep, demanding more money. Naturally, the judge refused to turn over a single red cent. Well, Pap got to feeling more and more desperate, till finally one pleasant spring day, the elder Finn kidnapped his son and took him to stay in a remote log hut on the Illinois side of the Mississippi. Huck reveled in the fishing and hunting, but he didn't like being kept under lock and key when Pap went into town. Nor was he fond of the beatings he received when Pap staggered home drunk. One night, after Pap almost killed him, Huck decided it was time to escape. The next night, while Pap was in town, Huck sawed a piece out of one of the logs in the cabin wall, crawled out the hole, and carefully replaced the chunk. Then he smashed in the cabin door with an axe, dribbled pig's blood on the ground, and stuck a few of his own hairs on the bloody axe for effect. He sure hoped Pap would think he had been killed. For 3 days, the boy happily camped out on Jackson Island. Then out on a ramble one night, he saw something that caused his heart to jump up amongst his lungs. Campfire. To his relief, though, he soon saw that the blaze was tended to by Jim, Miss Watson's Negro slave. Jim, meanwhile, stared wildly at what he presumed was Huck's ghost. "Don't hurt me, don't," he wailed. "I always liked dead people and done all I could for them." When Huck finally calmed Jim down enough to explain that his death had been fabricated, Jim confided that he'd run off from home after hearing that Miss Watson was planning to sell him downriver, and so the fugitives made camp together. Then one night, after a heavy storm had swollen the river, Jim and Huck found a frame house floating by on the current. Inside, they found a dead man lying amongst a scattered deck of cards and empty whiskey bottles. Jim warned Huck not to look at the man's face. It was too ghastly. Together, they searched the rooms for useful goods and sent the house on its way. As time passed, Huck found himself itching for news from home. Finally, one day, he dressed up in a girl's calico dress and bonnet and stepped daintily into Hannibal to gather some gossip. Lisping out questions in a high-pitched voice, he learned that some townsfolk thought poor dead Huck had been killed by his pap, who had up and disappeared himself just a few days earlier. Others thought Jim must have done the deed, since he and Huck had vanished on the same night. In fact, some men were talking about going to Jackson Island later that night to see if they could rouse Jim. Double fast, Huck hurried back to Jim's side. "There ain't a minute to lose," he warned. "They're after us." Within minutes, the fugitives had loaded up Jim's raft and started down the Mississippi. Their plan was to board a steamship north, where Jim could earn money to buy the freedom of his wife and children. But Huck couldn't help feeling guilty. After all, Jim was a runaway. He was Miss Watson's property. Huck finally decided that he would turn Jim in the next chance he got. But when a boatload of men appeared looking for runaways, Huck told them that he was sharing the raft with his sick father, who was lying inside the tent with a bad case of smallpox. That sent the men paddling away in a hurry. Huck felt a few pangs about helping a nigger on the lam, but he knew his conscience would kill him if he betrayed a good friend like Jim. So the travelers continued downstream, encountering one adventure after another. Then one night, after drifting into a bank of thick fog, they heard the unmistakable sound of a steamboat bearing down on them, leaped into the water to avoid being mashed. When Huck finally pulled himself up on shore and called out for Jim, there was no answer. Soon afterward, Huck was taken in by a rich family named Grangerford. The Grangerfords were good, generous people, and they treated Huck to all the comforts he could want. But they were somehow caught up in a bitter feud with another family named Shepherdson for reasons no one could remember. One day, the Grangerford slave who attended Huck asked him to come into the woods to see some snakes. Rather than snakes, however, Huck found his old friend Jim there, hidden in the underbrush. But tragically, that very night, while Huck was gone, a battle was touched off between the feuding families, in which the entire Grangerford clan was killed. "I wished I hadn't ever come ashore that night to see such things," Huck later grieved. "I ain't never going to get shut of them." So once more, the raft mates set off down the Mississippi. A few days later, they took two fellows on board with them who professed to be from royal families. One said he was a duke, while the other claimed to be a king. Although Huck knew that they were lying, he decided to play along. The two hucksters stopped periodically at towns along the river to carry out get-rich schemes. At one village, the king learned that a rich man named Peter Wilkes had just died, leaving $3,000 to his three daughters, and that Wilkes' deaf and dumb brother would be arriving soon for the funeral. He gathered as much information as he could about the brother, and then coached the duke to impersonate him. Sure enough, the poor daughters entrusted the uncle with their entire inheritance. Disgusted by these shenanigans, Huck sneaked into the scoundrel's room that night to reclaim the money, which he then stashed safely in the dead man's coffin for the daughters to retrieve. The next day, the real brother showed up, and the duke and the king were hauled away to jail. But just as Huck and Jim were untying their raft to move on, the two escape artists came running down the bank to rejoin them. It was all Huck could do to keep from crying. The next day, the foursome stopped off at another town. After running some errands, Huck returned to the raft to find Jim gone. "The duke had sold the runaway," complained the king, "and never divided with me, and the money's gone." Immediately, Huck set off to the rescue. But to his surprise, at the plantation where Jim had been imprisoned, he was greeted by a woman who gave him a loving squeeze and called him Tom Sawyer. She was Tom's own Aunt Sally, and obviously she had taken Huck for her nephew, who was due to arrive for a visit. So, in order to help out Jim, Huck gladly assumed Tom's identity. When Tom eventually showed up, the boys shared a grand reunion. They decided that Huck would pretend to be Tom's cousin, Sid, whenever they were around Aunt Sally. Then Huck told Tom about Jim's situation and revealed his plan to steal the key, unlock the door to the hut where the slave was being kept, and then head down the river. Tom, however, had been reading pirate books. He favored digging a tunnel into the hut. That plan sounded infinitely more complicated and dangerous, so, naturally, they immediately settled on it. When the tunnel was finally completed, Tom wrote an anonymous letter to Mr. Phelps, the plantation owner. "There's a desperate gang of cutthroats going to steal your runaway nigger tonight." Then the boys made their way through the tunnel into Jim's hut. Fleeing into the darkness, the three were chased by Phelps and a posse of gun-toting farmers. Alive and free for the moment, they reached the raft. But Tom had caught a real live bullet in the leg, and the group was soon recaptured. Back at the Phelps farm, there were cries to hang the double runaway, and Jim was again securely locked up. Suddenly, Tom sat upright in bed. "There ain't no right to shut Jim up. He's free as any creature that walks this earth. Old Miss Watson died 2 months ago, and she set him free in her will." "Then what on earth did you want to set him free for?" cried Aunt Polly. "Well, I wanted the adventure of it," Tom replied. Jim was immediately released. Phelps then fed him and gave him a suit of clothes, while Tom gave him $40 for being such a respectable prisoner. Although Tom was now ready to return home, Huck was reluctant to join him for fear of his pap. Hearing this, Jim made a sad confession. "He ain't a-coming back no more, Huck. Don't you remember the house was floating down the river, and there was a man in there, kivered up, who that was him?" And so Huck headed back on the double toward the Widow Douglas house, before Aunt Sally made good on her threat to adopt him. According to Ernest Hemingway, modern American literature begins with Huckleberry Finn, Twain's sequel to Tom Sawyer. Mellowed by the introduction of real pathos, deepened by a new attention to Huck's developing consciousness and conscience, and broadened by its undercover exploration of social and political ambiguities, the book is obviously a richer and more sophisticated work. But what distinguishes it, as proudly and quintessentially American, is its unabashed use of the first-person Missouri vernacular narrative voice. Naturally, Twain's characteristic humor peppers Huck's pages. Indeed, Twain prefaces the story with a warning that persons attempting to find a motive in this narrative will be prosecuted. Persons attempting to find a moral will be banished. Persons attempting to find a plot in it will be shot. Nevertheless, the novel explores significant and very American issues. including the legitimacy of hierarchical social relationships.